Cybersecurity threats have become even more daunting in the U.S. in recent months, and efforts to protect all sorts of information are finding challenges. Do we have to sacrifice privacy in order to achieve true security, or is that a dated concept? In a few minutes, I'll talk with former Homeland Security Secretary Michael Chertoff about current cybersecurity challenges and what government can do. I start with Jamie Winterton, Director of Strategy at the Global Security Initiative at ASU. She's hosting an event today at the O'Connor College of Law called Unlocking the Privacy Security Debate. So, Jamie, are privacy and security compatible?
I think they can. I think not only can they be compatible, but it's necessary for us to have a degree of privacy in order to truly be secure. This is framed often in a you can pick one or the other kind of scenario. But if you think about a world wherein you don't have any privacy, you don't feel much more secure. I feel terribly insecure when I think about that. And it's not because we necessarily have something to hide or that something malicious is going on, but there are pieces of our lives that we want to control who has access and who doesn't have access to those things. If privacy isn't a part of that, and all of our information is out there or is being consumed, then what say do we get over how that's interpreted?
So to what degree can the average person either trust the government when it comes to this or trust Silicon Valley industry?
There are very similar aspects to this. Surveillance is usually considered a government term, and we're much more aware with the Snowden leaks and things that have been revealed about government activities as to what government is doing with our information. There is also a lot going on with industry. Industry collects a lot of information and builds very complex profiles about who we are, what we do, and how we behave. I'm not convinced that these treasure troves of information are protected as well as they should be. And most people don't know that these things are out there, that their personal information are part of these databases. They should have more of a say in what gets included and what doesn't.
To some extent, we need to start at square one to decide, okay, this is the kind of information that is needed. This is the type of communication that is needed.
We do need to go back to square one. And square one is really the relationship between people and the government and the data that exists between the two. I probably have a different definition of privacy than you do, than most people out there. We should be able to, with industry, customize what kind of data is being collected about us. So in the recent CIA leaks, it was found that the CIA was able to exploit vulnerabilities or capabilities even of in-home smart devices. These devices are often turned on by default. Maybe they should just be turned off by default, or we should let people know what their devices are capable of doing and then let them decide. Some people really don't mind that a lot of information is being collected because it's used to provide them better products and better services. Some people really don't want that, but I don't see a real clear offering to the public where they can decide. Now, with the government, that's a little bit different. Mm-hmm. It's hard for the government to say, well, we'd like to know if you're a terrorist or not. How do you feel about that? That's probably not the right level of conversation. But the government should step up and say, here's the information we've collected in the past. Here's the level of information maybe that we're not planning on collecting.
How much does the situation about privacy versus security, how does that fit into our notions of who we are as free people and what we are allowed to do within limits and how much the government or anyone else is allowed to know about us?
These two topics are intertwined very deeply. Mm. What you're free to do, what you're free to say, how you're free to represent yourself. And it's often said with freedom of speech, you're free to say what you want, but then you're also free to have the consequences of that. I don't think the consequences are quite as clear in this case of your personal data and privacy. Mm-hmm. We need to have a more open conversation. So we also need to think about this more creatively from a technology perspective, too. So thinking about how do we create technologies that can help enable privacy, but not at the expense of security. We're going to hunker down with some of our technical experts from the university and from our industry partners and think about how do we build good technologies that can do both. And it's my hope that this is the first start of a large-scale research agenda that can really help.
Jamie Winterton is Director of Strategy at the Global Security Initiative at ASU. She's hosting an event today at the O'Connor College of Law called Unlocking the Privacy Security Debate. And one of the event's attendees is former U.S. Homeland Security Secretary Michael Chertoff. I spoke with him earlier and started our conversation by asking how high a priority cybersecurity should be for President Trump and Congress.
Well, I would say that cybersecurity should be at the top rank. Obviously, we've been experiencing cyber attacks for some time, but the concern has been that they've increasingly become destructive, and that poses a threat not only to our IT infrastructure, but actually potentially to human life and to our economy. So I would put this at the very top rank of concerns for security folks.
How do you balance the need for security with what many people would also say is a need for privacy?
Well, I would actually argue that you can't have privacy without security. I mean, privacy involves people making a commitment to safeguard your data and the way it gets used. And that's obviously very important. But if you can't control the data you hold, or you can't protect it against intruders, then the promise is worthless. So to me, security and privacy are actually part of the same thing. They're creating an architecture that makes sure that only the appropriate person has the ability to access, control, and dispose of the data. And that satisfies both security and privacy requirements.
So has the dynamic, has the atmosphere changed enough? Because I was thinking, not long after 9/11, it seemed like the arguments were pretty clear. There was a bright line that some people said, well, in order to protect us from potential terrorism, we had to, in many ways, strip certain aspects of privacy. And other people talked about civil liberties. Have we advanced beyond that?
You know, I hope we have. I do think that as time has passed, we've kind of calibrated where we should be, and we've reached maybe a little bit more of a sustainable point. Some of the immediate actions that were taken after September 11th have been put on a firmer legal footing. Americans still appreciate the importance of protecting ourselves. And so I feel we're in a pretty good place, although there's obviously always debate. It gets more complicated in cyber because many people don't fully understand the nature of the threat. Everybody's familiar with stolen identities, stolen credit card numbers, things of that sort. What they don't realize is increasingly the physical systems that operate in our world are controlled through cyberspace. And that means an attack from a cyber actor can have a real physical world impact.
Do you think enough of the public have been thinking about this? And how much do you think that has been affected and our awareness has been affected by some of what, I guess I have to say, allegations at this point of Russian activity or the degree of Russian involvement? Has that put it more in the headlines for people?
Well, it certainly put it in the headlines, although I would say, for example, you had the Office of Personnel Management hack. That was a very big headline. You have the Yahoo hacks, a billion plus accounts that were compromised. And of course, there was an indictment on Thursday about that. I do think we have to be a little careful, though. When I talk about cybersecurity, I mean literally the integrity and the availability of the hardware and software that operates our IT infrastructure. There's a separate issue which has to do with the interest that, let's say, foreign governments have in promoting propaganda or distorted views of the world. That's something that often occurs over the internet, but it's not necessarily connected to the internet. It also involves mass media and other kinds of modes of communication. And we want to be careful not to begin to talk about protecting cyberspace as somehow controlling what people are allowed to say or read, because then we get into some difficult First Amendment issues.
Trust is such an important word when it comes to this. And I think both when it comes to government policy and Silicon Valley and industry and whatnot, do those sides need to come together? And can that help the public feel trust? Because even when we think about whether the accuracy of this or not, that our smartphones or our smart TVs could be spying on us, obviously that alarms a lot of people.
Sure. Now, and I agree, trust is critical. And a lot of what's happened, particularly with the leaks and the distortions that came out of Snowden, is that that's been actually designed to erode trust. And to be honest, I think quite deliberately, it's designed to drive a wedge between the tech community and the public and the government. And a lot of it is overblown. For example, we've known for some time it's possible to remotely turn on a television or a similar device and use it as a recording medium. This is nothing new. It was presented in a way to suggest that it was something which the government was doing illicitly. I do think people need to be mindful about how they deal with their devices, particularly as we get to the so-called Internet of Things. But I would like to see the government and the private sector get together and achieve a level of clarity and understanding about what's permitted and what's not permitted and what these various kinds of things involve. And that's one way I think we rebuild trust.
I don't know that people even think about how difficult your job must have been as Homeland Security Secretary. Is that a job that just continues to get harder and harder as technology advances?
Well, I think the breadth of issues you have to deal with continues to increase. So when I was secretary, we did address the issue of cybersecurity. We had a comprehensive national cybersecurity initiative. But at the time, the dimensions of the threat were not what they are now. And we've seen in recent years, power plants in the Ukraine being brought down, an effort to bring down a small dam upstate in New York. So this is now, in part, on the plate of the new Secretary of Homeland Security, along with the traditional issues you worry about, such as terrorism and things of that sort.
Just based on what you heard and the folks you know, do you think the administration is prioritizing cybersecurity enough?
The Homeland Security advisor in the White House, Tom Bosch, gave a speech the other day, and I think he quite accurately pointed out the need to accelerate the way the federal government protects its own networks and the need to hold people accountable. So I'm optimistic that in the area of cyber, we are seeing progress. We're seeing continuation of progress that we've made over the last 10 years. But we have to recognize that the adversaries are also making progress, and it's a little bit like a cat and mouse game, and we have to make sure we're ahead of the mice.
Michael Chertoff was Secretary of Homeland Security for the U.S. from 2005 to 2009. He's in the Valley this morning for the Unlocking the Privacy Security Debate event, which is taking place at the Sandra Day O'Connor College of Law. Secretary Chertoff, nice to talk with you. Thanks for the time.
My pleasure.